What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate upcoming, FanDuel, DraftKings. Of course, this is not the DFS slate upcoming podcast. This is not the future tense. This is the past tense. This is the NFL recap show. I was thinking about it, and I know I have a, we have more on our plate because of NBA breakdowns and stuff like that. And I hope yesterday people had a good time. Shout out to those who reached out and, said, hey, the great show last night. It was some really good results. De'Aaron Fox had a really nice game. Mike James had a really nice game. Josh Richardson, again, putting in work, some really, really good stuff around around the league. So that was great. Be looking for the next NBA show for the Friday slate. That will be the Friday slate breakdown. But I know people really like the NFL recap. And the thing that I notice about it is not only does it get good, good traction as far as people just listening and enjoying the show, it really actually has... it's really important for me. If you don't go back and figure out what is going on, it's really, really hard to get a complete and full picture of how every team is operating and what they're doing, and how important things are. Like rereading. It's like the process of rereading and reviewing your answers on a test. So really important for me to make sure that in order to bring you guys a good product, as far as the, the player breakdown and all that good stuff, it's really, really key to make sure that we have, we go through this recap process. So here it is. I'm getting a new interesting format for us every week. I try to kind of change it up, pivot a little bit. 15 games last week, right? 30 teams in action. I've got 60 stats all here. 15 games, 30 teams, 60 stats, for each game. So I will go through this. They're kind of out of order, and I apologize for that. They're not in chronological order for some reason, but and it doesn't matter. Okay. I covered everything. All right. Don't get on my ass. Starting a Thursday night, Kansas City, Oakland, one, Derek Carr threw the ball deep 10 different times, 52 attempts. There was clearly a shift in offensive game plan to stretch the field. We saw Amari Cooper get 17 targets going deep down the field, and don't sleep on Jared Cook, who also had 107 receiving yards on seven targets. So Crabtree also very relevant. If they are going to continue this game plan, guys, we have to continue to be interested in this passing offense. But remember, it's not just Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper actually had the lowest catch rate of all the receivers. So keep an eye on that information. On the Chiefs side, DeMarcus Robinson filled in for Conley and was actually more effective. He ran 100% of routes on his snaps there and saw a 21% target share. Very effective. It's interesting. Keep your eyes on him. If this trend continues, he may be a sleepy candidate for some targets outside of, Kelce and Hill. Smith's passer rating was just unbelievable. Once again, 127 to Carr's 101. Smith is just super duper efficient, and we're going to have to continue to consider him as a possible QB in our DFS lineups because he's just been so, so efficient. And that is what you want more than anything, mistake-free football that creates positive opportunities for the entire offense. Denver, LA. Chargers offense was just as bad as the Denver offense. It doesn't appear this because of this, the box score, right? Okay, you look at the box score and you go, wow, man, Chargers offense must have dominated. 21-0. Holy smokes. No, the Chargers offense was just as bad in success rate and first down rate as the Broncos. The defense absolutely destroyed. Listen to these numbers for the Chargers defense in the last 3 weeks. Against the Giants, one interception, two fumbles created, one was lost on five sacks. Oakland, two interceptions, three fumbles, all were recovered by running back, strangely enough, and a sack. Denver, one interception, three fumbles, only one recovered, and then five sacks. Unbelievable. Unbelievable numbers. They are winning the turnover battle, and they are winning games. Philip Rivers knows how to manage a lead, so that absolutely will help. And they've started to use Hunter Henry. He has been their most effective receiver on the Chargers, no doubt about it. He went 5 for 4, 73 yards. The man has an incredible catch rate and is hyper efficient with yards after the catch as well. He is definitely one of the best tight ends in the league right now. AJ Derby, speaking of tight ends, he is becoming a thing. 2 games with 6-plus targets. It's very clear that Trevor Siemian trusts and likes him. And with Emmanuel Sanders out, I think that A.J. Derby could be a name that you keep in your mind as matchups come along. The running back timeshare in Denver is a disaster. It is a full effect. 11 carries Anderson, 8 touches for Charles, 5 touches for Booker. You got to put this situation in a full fade unless you get a perfectly positive game script where you know the Broncos are going to be scoring a ton of points. It just isn't worth rostering. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Here's an interesting, Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. Joe Mixon averaging 6 yards per carry, but they only were able to run the ball in 29% of plays. The Pittsburgh defense limited them to about 210 total yards. Really, really good stuff from the Pittsburgh defense. Once again, back-to-back weeks of dominant performances inside the division. 2 explosive runs for Mixon. So I think we're going to have to keep our eye on this guy because he clearly is starting to figure out how to run the ball. And I also think this is an effect. I don't know what to make. I think it's the Pittsburgh pass defense is in the Pittsburgh game. The way that they're game planning for these teams is so effective. They've taken away they're finding your weakness, right? With Cincinnati, they basically said, we're not going to give you AJ Green. We're not going to give you the passing game. We're not going to let you do that. If you want to run the ball, that's fine. Right. With Kansas City, they said, we're just going to crash the pocket. We're just going to force Alex Smith, you know, to be out of the pocket. We're not going to let him be comfortable. We're not going to let you have Kareem Hunt. You know, they have done a really good job of taking away and targeting a team's weakness on defense. 31% success rate for the Cincinnati offense, only 3.5 yards per play, not per carry, per play. 6.2 yards per play for Pittsburgh. Unbelievable productiveness from that offense. They ran the ball nearly 70% of the time. Bell had 35 carries, 4 yards per carry, 51% success rate, which is just mind-boggling. Anytime he has rushed for more than 27 times, they win. Correlation, causation doesn't matter. It's the connection is there. He's in play in all formats. The Martavis Bryant, Juju Schuster-Smith stuff, you know what? Listen, they're very similar from a fantasy perspective. Hopefully Martavis gets moved. I don't think he will because the Steelers are very, very stick to their guns. At the end of the season, the agent might just, you know, put his foot down and say whatever. But they're going to hold on to this kid and they're going to basically say, listen, your contract's ours. Sorry, pal. But, you know, he just needs to fade social media and try and keep himself out of trouble. It's not that Smith is necessarily getting the ball more than Bryant or getting more snaps than Bryant. This week, it wasn't that he was getting more snaps or anything like that. It's that he's been getting the touchdowns. But the reality is this offense belongs to two people. It's Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. You don't really need to worry about anything else. That's it. For our purposes, that's all we're worried about. Let's let Martavis and Juju, you know, they can figure it out on their own. Seattle, New York, Russ, baby. Russ, 300 yards plus again. He's got 11 TDs to 3 interceptions. Once again, being just hyper-efficient self with, you know, a suboptimal situation. No running backs to speak of. No offensive line to speak of. He just keeps getting it done. He is their offense, right? I mean, if he goes down, this team is going to suffer the exact same fate that the Packers suffer. Worthless. Absolutely worthless. You know, the interesting thing, he threw the ball deep 6 times. We see he's not running. He's actually scrambling around in the pocket. And rather than running and taking off, he's actually been scrambling and trying to create some deep routes, deep throws, which has been working well for him. He's been able to connect on deep throws. He's pretty accurate on those. Baldwin, 12 targets. Graham, 6 targets. Baldwin was a beast. He went 9 receptions, 94 yards. Graham dropped 2 massive receptions. He would have padded another 50 to 60 yards, possibly another touchdown on if he had picked up 2 of those 6 targets. He could have gone 5 for 6. They hit him in the hands. On one of them, he was turning to run upfield and just didn't finish the play. It was really frustrating. I had Graham everywhere. As far as the running backs go, fade the running backs. And as far as the New York Giants offense goes, fade the offense, except for Evan Ingram. That's it. Evan Ingram is the only asset. We're getting to a point in this at this point in the season where there are offenses, unless the matchup is absolutely, you know, garbage time beautiful, we don't have to try to project these players. We don't have to try to project the New York Giants offense. It's a disaster. Eli threw for 134 yards. It's a disaster. We don't need to deal with this. There's no point in trying to project and figure out where their value is here because, you know, sure, they're going to score touchdowns, but it's much more likely that we can figure out how to create good lineups without worrying about these shit teams. Dallas, San Francisco, Zeke. It's going to get suspended. I was talking to a buddy last night watching Monday Night Football, and he's like, it's coming down. It's coming down November 1st. Don't worry. It's coming down. Guys, hold on to your Alfred Morris and Derek, what's his name? DMC shares, because this guy, very serious sports bettor, fantasy player, very, very sure that Zeke is going to get the book by Goodell. They're just waiting for the other judge to come back, and they're going to say, listen, this is the NFL's discretion. This is, you sign a bargaining agreement. This is a union. This is your employer, da-da-da-da. They're allowed to suspend you for this. It's their discretion, in which case Goodell wins. It's the same thing that happened with Brady. He's pretty positive about it. He's talking to me about it. I was like, okay, you're way more confident than I am. I'm going to hold my shares. Dallas offensive line, 3.6 yards before contact. Just for context, on a good offensive line before contact is like 2 yards. Like, that's excellent. Excellent. 2 yards before contact. Like, average is like 1.7. They went 3.6 yards before contact in this game. Unbelievable. Zeke averaged 8 yards per touch. The team had a 64% success rate. That is mind-boggling, considering that, like, the Cincinnati had a 31% success rate, or like a 21% success rate. Unbelievable that they were almost three times more effective than certain other offenses this week. Dez, 9 targets again, end zone target again. Dak again with 30 points, 2 touchdown throws on only 16 completions. Give me a break. Dak is so good. I love this guy. As far as San Francisco goes, I'm not giving up on Hyde. I'm really, really upset with the way that this game went for him. I rostered Hyde. It was a little bit of a force play, but I knew I was going to be different than everybody, and I saw him going to have a good game. He went into halftime averaging 5 yards per carry. He had 11 touch and 58 yards. I was like, this is why it's going to work. They squandered 2 red zone opportunities. One was a Beathard fumble. The problem that you have here is when you're attached to a team that's a losing team, you're always going to be a negative game script, and Hyde isn't going to be able to get good volume. When the San Francisco 49ers are in possibly good game script in a situation where they can run the ball, Hyde is definitely in play. He had a 50% success rate. That's unique. This San Francisco offensive line is good. The numbers indicate that they are good. Hyde has been effective. He's been efficient. The system is working. The problem is that they threw the ball in 70% of pass plays. They threw the ball in 70% of plays because they were down literally before they even got out of the locker room. Beathard again, interesting. I think this kid's got something. San Francisco may have a quarterback here. 22 for 35, no interceptions, took a sack, dropped a fumble. Okay, fine, but you get blindsided by somebody just hitting you straight in your back and knocking the ball out of your hand, you're going to drop it too. They squandered some red zone trips. He's learning, but I don't think he's bad. I think he's actually a halfway decent quarterback, and I think he'll finish the season. There'll be some Beathard games, don't worry. He's accurate, and he's throwing the ball deep too. Goodwin was the leading wide receiver here, 70 yards. Baltimore at Minnesota. Flacco now has 5 games on the season with less than 10 fantasy points. this backfield is a disaster, we don't have to worry about Baltimore. We don't have to project anything except for their defense on a week-to-week basis. That's it. That's all I'm going to say about Baltimore, unless they have incredibly positive game script and an excellent matchup where they're highly, highly favored at home. They're the same category right now. Same bucket as Arizona, New York, Baltimore, these teams that you just really don't have to project because there's really nothing worth Indianapolis. There's nothing worth rostering on these teams. There's nothing worth. You can literally just say, I'm fading. These guys are permafades. Permafades unless a really interesting situation blows up or I want to get into a GPP. You know, these teams are bad. Baltimore is a bad team. I don't know what else to say. Moving on to Minnesota, if Mike Zimmer switches to Teddy Bridgewater, I think that Minnesota will compromise their season. Case Keenum is managing games. He's getting it done. He has rapport with the rest of the team. There's zero reason to move away from Case Keenum here. Zero reason. He's been effective enough. They have a system. You have a bunch of in-game experience with the team that's on the field. There's zero reason to move away from Case Keenum here, regardless of what Teddy Bridgewater says or thinks. He's great. He's a good kid. I love him. Give him a good opportunity, but now's not the time. Case Keenum is the quarterback. Murray and McKinnon, dead even timeshare. 17, 18 carries for them. Why did it happen this week, Sean? Why is this happening, Sean? I thought McKinnon was the lead back. Yeah, he is the lead back, guys. Don't worry about it. He is the better back. He's the more effective back. But when you have an abusive, massive front, and a really, really aggressive front seven, like the Baltimore front seven, a bigger back like Latavius Murray. Let's not forget the size differential here. McKinnon is like 5'10", 5'11", 210 pounds, if that, whereas Murray is about 6'3", 225. I mean, he is just a full-on bruiser, which is why he was so damn good near the goal line. I think people forget how big Latavius Murray actually is, and which is why he actually was able to bust off 100 yards and a touchdown, because what? He got through the line, he bruised through a couple broken tackles, got to the second level of a stacked box. A stacked box, you leave a stacked box in your wake, there's literally no one else down there. And that's what he did. And that's why it made sense that they went with him. It was probably a good call on the Minnesota coaching staff's standpoint, but there will be spots where we go back to McKinnon. I think that that's going to be one thing that we have to remember. As far as the passing game here, Thielen, once again, 10 targets. He only had 5 catches, but you know what? Hey, Baltimore pass defense is legit. For him to get 10 targets, get open that often in legitimate pass situations, good for him. Treadwell ran 93% of routes on 83% snap rate. They like him. They're going to use him. And if Steph Diggs stays out, there's going to be Laquon Treadwell spots that we could possibly target at super low ownership for tournament lineups. New York, Miami. How about the Jets, man? Coming out, swinging Josh McCown for touchdown McCown. We know. Touchdown McCown. Not bad time to be a Jets fan, actually. The Jets and the Eagles, it's a good time to be in that New Jersey, Philadelphia area. Listen, the Jets are bad, but considering how bad they could have been coming into the season, this season has been promising. They could have beat the Patriots. They could have beat the Dolphins. They've had some good games. Matt Forte, 12 total touches, 80 total yards, nearly 6 yards per touch. Very interesting. People want to believe that he's so bad. He's so bad, Sean. He's so bad. Matt Forte has been in the league for 10 years and he's always produced. What part of that is bad? I don't understand it. This is a veteran wide receiver who has been able to catch the ball out of the backfield and produce. He's been able to carry the ball and produce. He's terrible in the red zone, in the goal line, but he's always been able to produce. I just don't think Matt Forte is that bad. There's going to be spots where we can go to him. I think that you can get cheap touchdowns and cheap production out of Matt Forte if you are willing to hold your nose a little bit while you're creating your rosters. As for the passing game here, you know what? Listen, it is exactly what we thought it is. It is minimal targets for a guy like Robbie Anderson and ASJ. That's it. 5 targets each. Both got a touchdown, 3 receptions. Now, is that really, really projectable? No, it's not projectable volume, and it's difficult on a matchup-to-matchup basis. And Miami's pass defense is halfway decent, you know? The problem is that you just don't have necessarily, you're attaching yourself again to an inconsistent offense, right? how many points are they going to create? Are they going to try to win with their defense? That kind of thing. This game required them to score because it was back and forth and back and forth. Moving on to the Dolphins. Everybody's going to say on the Matt Moore, yay, he's going to save them. Yes, Matt Moore was fine versus Jay. You're right. And it feels like Matt Moore is better. It definitely feels like Matt Moore inspires a whole lot more confidence. But let's listen to the numbers. And this is going to kind of make us go eye roll. Eye roll for sure. Jay was 12 of 16 with a 114 passer rating, 2 touchdowns and an interception. That's damn good for Jay, guys. Can we give Jay a little bit of credit for that? That's a really good Jay day. Like, that might be one of Jay's top 10 best performances in the last two years. And he left the game in the second quarter. Matt Moore, however, 13 for 21, 62% completion rate, lower than Jay's killer 75% completion rate, 102 passer rating, but also 2 touchdowns and an interception. Here's the difference, and here's why it feels like Matt Moore is better. This is the difference, and it's actually a big deal. 10 first downs for Matt Moore. 10 first downs created to Jay's 6, a 45% first down rate to a 33% first down rate. That is a big deal. You're talking about 4 extra first downs, the ability to extend drives, make passes in key situations when everybody's going, let's see how good you are, create the first down. That emotional relief that is associated with first downs is not something that Jay Cutler brings to the table. He is not a quarterback who makes you feel comfortable about the progress of your offense. He may have had a good game from a numbers standpoint, but Matt Moore certainly seems to be slightly more productive. He also really likes Kenny Stills. Let's not forget how many touchdowns he and Kenny Stills hooked up for in December of 2016. One every single week. Every single week, he created 2 touchdowns for Kenny Stills instantly. Him and Stills have a thing. It's a reel. So look at Kenny Stills' positive matchups here. Jay Ajayi, by the way, still volume hog, just total volume hog. 23 carries again. He doesn't catch the ball. But in good matchups, Jay Ajayi is going to be a guy. We knew he was going to struggle with the Jets because he's struggled with the Jets. The Jets have his number. They know how to stop him. They know what kind of runner he is. They know what to do with that offensive line. So the Jets got to him. Not necessarily something that I am too concerned about because Jay Ajayi is not an every week back for me. He's not in Le'Veon Bell, Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, elite volume, Todd Gurley even category, which there's a lot of guys in this elite volume. LeSean McCoy is now in that elite volume category. Zeke is in the elite volume category. So those he is borderline in the elite. He's more in the Jordan Howard tier. Let's call it that. Plenty of carries, no receptions. But the only guy who's going to touch the ball, especially in positive game script. Fair? That's where we'll put him. We'll put him in that bucket. Arizona, Los Angeles. Speaking of elite volume. Oh, wait, sorry. Speaking of offenses, I just wanted to skip this. Cardinals offense is dead. It's getting worse. Their schedule is getting worse. Drew Stanton is not good. Adrian Peterson doesn't have it. I said that last week. He's fine. He's great. He's a nice guy. But you know what? That was the end of the Adrian Peterson renaissance. Week 6. Sorry. It's over. The Arizona season is over. They won't bring David Johnson back. Carson Palmer is not going to come back. Larry Fitzgerald is no longer fantasy relevant. There's no reason to deal with this team. The same as the Giants. Don't deal with them. Okay? Moving on to LA, a team that is highly, highly likable and very, very interesting. Todd Gurley, elite volume, 26 total touches, 150 total yards and a touchdown. He keeps getting the touches. He keeps getting the targets. He keeps getting the touchdowns. Gotta love Todd Gurley. Keep going back to him. He is in play every single week. Consider him. Cooper Kupp, 10 targets again, making the most of them. 5 receptions and a touchdown there. He seems to be a guy that Goff is comfortable with. Now, Woods and Watkins getting plenty of work as well, but plenty of work for Jared Goff means about 4 or 5 targets. To see Cooper Kupp get 10 targets in this game really actually tells you quite a bit about where Goff's rapport is developing. And that really, really is with Cooper Kupp. So we've been keeping an eye on Goff in the deep throws. Only one this week, but Watkins was the one. There's going to be a Sammy Watkins game, guys. There's going to be a Sammy Watkins game. Keep that in the back of your head. I'm telling you, it's just like the whole Amari Cooper thing. He's going to regress. He's good. He is that good. He is that physically gifted. There's going to be an opportunity. Jacksonville versus Indiana. Jacksonville had 10 sacks. Holy shit. 10? Isn't this the second game where they have at least 10 sacks? How good is this front seven? Holy smokes. Just disastrous. I mean, wow. They could win the division. They could win the division. I mean, the thing is Tennessee already beat them once, but they could. They could win the division. TJ Yeldon just busted out, and he is the better back. He's much better than Chris Ivory. Chris Ivory, man, he's only useful for contrast to Leonard Fournette, because when he comes out in possible passing down situations and they go, "Fooled you, we're running it again. Ha ha, yes." And Tom Coughlin silently fist pumps in the booth because everybody says it's a passing situation and they run it anyway. That's when Chris Ivory... That's when Chris Ivory is useful. But TJ Yeldon still has the pedigree. He's still young. How we forget this? He is a first-round back out of University of Alabama. Man is fast. He is long. He can catch footballs. He is good. If you actually get TJ Yeldon and Leonard Fournette going in this backfield, whoo. I mean, you just, everybody forgets how good TJ Yeldon was in college and the reason why he was drafted in the first round, because he was such a disaster in those first years in Jacksonville. And he was a disaster. It was absolutely a problem. But you know, now there's a really interesting possibility here that they have a seriously dangerous combination of backs, because TJ Yeldon is a much greater version of what Chris Ivory is, and hopefully they now see that. As for the passing game, of course Blake Bortles threw 330 yards, and of course Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee, 15 targets, almost 200 yards total between the two of them. Way to go, Joe Berg calling the Allen Hurns call over Marquise Lee. I was on Marquise Lee. It was close. It was very close. It was close in PPR format. But Hurns got him, you know. Bortles, it's interesting. They seem to have found a contrast, the deep ball, right? If he can get a pocket, they're just going to let him hurl it, because he's not really good in quick read situation, timing routes. We've seen all that. But he does have arm strength, so you let him stretch the field, let a receiver go get it, be the only guy who can make a play. That seems like a good situation for Blake. Colts, Arizona, New York, Colts, add him to the list. You don't need to play him. Marlon Mack, maybe every once in a while, but Luck isn't coming back this season. There's no reason. There's no reason. You don't bring back your franchise quarterback 8 weeks into a season when you have only won one game. What's the point? Right? It's the same thing about David Johnson. New Orleans Green. I mean, can you believe that? We are going to see an entire 2017 season without David Johnson or Andrew Luck. Wow. New Orleans Green Bay. New Orleans offense clicking, baby. 59% success rate. That is great. That is the second highest number behind the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're actually better behind the Dallas Cowboys. Those are some elite offenses. Cowboys, Saints, Steelers. Those are some elite offenses right now. Breeze actually held them back in the first half. I know that sounds insane, but Breeze was actually the problem. The two first half interceptions were an issue. His first half numbers not very good, but on the whole finished the day with a 71% completion rate and 330 passing yards. So what is Drew Breeze's day? What is the New Orleans offense's day look like if Drew Brees doesn't throw those interceptions? They dominate. They dominate in all phases. You know, and they let off one big run to Aaron Jones early in the game. Don't let the box score fool you. New Orleans owned this game. They did from the beginning. Alvin Kamara, 16 opportunities. Ingram, 27 opportunities. Ted Ginn goes 7 for 7. 7 for 7, well over 100 yards receiving. And Michael Thomas goes 7 for 11, over 82 yards. Classic Michael Thomas game. Double-digit targets, just about 10 catches, flirting with 10 catches, but not quite 100 yards. I mean, that's just Michael Thomas in a nutshell. I have him in season-long, and it's like every week. It's like, Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, all right, not bad. You know, you're like 15 points. All right, I'll take it. Colts are, sorry, that's, I accidentally read the note that says, the Colts are dead to me. Mac is interesting, but Luck isn't coming back. I didn't mean to read that again. Colts fans, apologies. I don't know if you guys are, you guys probably know that. Green Bay, this offense is getting border. I'm telling you, Hundley is not going to save this team. It's not happening. Brett Hundley is not the answer. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, run pass option. They're going to run the run pass option. And I tell you, Hundley is going to be good. Man, fuck off. There's a reason Hundley doesn't have the job. Okay? He's not that good. He's not. He's not going to make this offense worthwhile. This is not Aaron Rodgers. And this offensive line is banged up to the max. If Aaron Rodgers is taking 5 sacks a game and scrambling for his life to create backyard type plays like Russell Wilson, this team dies with him. It's over. It's over. I mean, I said last week, don't sell your assets. Fine. There's going to be games where they actually have, you know, they still have the Bears on the schedule at some point, but the Bears defense is actually pretty good. Aaron Jones is the only relevant fantasy option in this offense right now that is consistent. 17 carries, 5 targets. Of course, those 5 targets went for 3 receiving yards. But, you know, it's very, very hard to project this offense in a positive situation. I'm not going to even try and do it. I'm not going to try to do it unless they're in a perfect game script or anything like that in which Aaron Jones and the passing game is, unless the rushing game becomes relevant, then there's not going to be a situation when I'm interested in this offense. I'm going to be bearish. You guys can be bullish and try to force yourself back into thinking that the Packers are going to figure it out. They're just not. It's not that they'll win a couple games. But Brett Hundley, unless we see something good from him, I'm not going to buy into a quarterback that bad, especially with a really banged up offensive line. They have to change the entire identity of this team to try to be a run first team. This isn't like the Jaguars where you have a bad quarterback, but from the gate, you were a run first team, right? This is you're changing the entire identity of this team. So it's not what you expect, and the production is going to come from different places. Tennessee, Cleveland, Mike Mularkey, get out of here. Get out of the town. Go somewhere else. Stop wasting Marcus Mariota and a great offensive line. 50-50 run pass again against the top 5 rush defense in the league. The Browns are a joke as a team. They've gone through 3 quarterbacks, and you only beat them by a field goal? In overtime? The Titans offensive line only managed 0.4 yards before contact. That's 9 times less yards before contact than the Dallas Cowboys. That is a product of Cleveland's rush defense. They stop everybody. They're good. And Mularkey still ran the ball on 50% of plays like a jackass. Mariota threw the ball 34 times because this game went into extras. But he didn't connect on any of his deep routes. He didn't draw. He missed an easy touchdown to Delanie Walker. I don't know if anybody saw that, but if you had Delanie Walker, you were like, oh my God, why is this happening? My body hurts. Because Delanie Walker was just wide open. Mariota underthrew him completely, and he went to the ground. Didn't catch it. I think he's still not perfectly healthy. The bye week is going to be great. The deep throw inaccuracies, the inability to move here, 203 yards. You know, that was the difference between week 6 and week 7. He connected on a couple deep balls. That's what pushed him over 100 yards against the Colts in the touchdown, right? Versus in week 7, no deep balls, no deep touchdown. All of a sudden, you have a pretty mediocre performance from Mariota. I would know. I rostered him. The Browns, put him in the same bucket. Put him in the Baltimore, Arizona, New York Giants, Indianapolis bucket. A bucket of crustaceans, crabs, clawing at each other, pulling each other down, eating each other's limbs, in just a pile of sad, sad, mindless, I don't know. That's the bottom of the NFL. It's just a bucket of crabs you watch quietly with a little bit of disdain and sadness. And you just want to boil them alive. Let's boil the Browns alive. We need to fire Hugh Jackson. That's one. If you can't pick a quarterback, go through like six quarterbacks. This is a franchise problem. The quarterback talent development program there is a problem. Hugh Jackson is a great defensive coach. Is there some way that we can keep Hugh Jackson on as a defensive coordinator to maintain a defensive identity and then bring in a real head coach? That would be an interesting plan, Browns. There's an idea, because the defense is great. Carolina, Chicago. Talk about two teams that are really not very interesting. They are on the peripherals of this shit bucket, this bucket of crabs where the clawing happens. McCaffrey finally got the touches. 7 carries, 10 yards. Okay, so wait a second. It's not just a Jonathan Stewart problem. It's an offensive line problem. Terrible, terrible, terrible. He had 9 targets, though. Bears took care of it. They don't allow a ton of passing production. I was looking into that. I was like, you know what? Interesting. Maybe Christian McCaffrey's in play. Nope. Bears don't really allow a ton of... I think, if nothing else, they try to tackle well. That's what their defense does. They just try to tackle. They limit big plays. They've been good in pass defense. They were really good again. The sack for a fumble, the interception, fumble return. They just owned this game from the beginning, and John Fox said, great. This is great. We only have to throw the ball 7 times. Trubisky threw the ball 7 times. But listen to this. 4 completions for 100 yards. You project that, man. If he wanted to go 3 times, if he threw the ball 21 times, he would have thrown for 300 yards. I'm kidding. Listen, this is, and I heard somebody talking about this. It was Warren Sharp. Warren Sharp was talking about, how do you protect a young quarterback? You make the game plan so stupidly simple for him and so easy that he doesn't screw up, that you maintain the confidence. You maintain the confidence. You keep him in the game flow. You let him watch the game. You let the game come to him. And then when you need him to make plays, he can try to make plays. But if you don't need him to make plays, you rely on the other 10 guys around him. You rely on the offensive line, the running back. Those guys can make plays, right? 10 is greater than 1. And so, you know, the effort of those 10 guys got it done. Howard, 21 touches again, 3 yards per carry. This is a good rush defense. So that was interesting to see that. In a better matchup, he's a good idea. I'm not kidding. You know, Jordan Howard is why these are redeemable. They're not in the crab bucket of just lost hope. Carolina, though, is a very close to the crab bucket of lost hope. Cam is just bad. He took 5 sacks. He threw 2 interceptions. He had the fumble recovery for the touchdown. They had a 41% success rate, which is weird because that's average-ish. I think everything goes through Cam in this offense, you're going to be in trouble. I don't really see this offense as that good or that viable. And the defense clearly has some good pieces. They're going to be good. They're going to keep them in games, but it's not, you know, necessarily an interesting opportunity. I'm not that interested in Carolina. I haven't been for a while. Tampa Bay, Buffalo. Oh, come on, Bucks. What's the deal? Fucking fumbled the ball in the last couple seconds. Famous Jameis is just crushing right now. He has 4 games with more than 320 yards. Okay, the first game of the year, he didn't throw for 300 yards because they won the game in the first half against the Bucks. They ran the ball the entire second half. And then in the Arizona game, he left in the first quarter. Those are the only games where he hasn't thrown for over 320 yards. Every other game, he's thrown for 320 yards. Jameis is in play. 384 passing yards on 44 attempts. He had 32 completions. He is good. Jameis Winston is good. He's a good quarterback. He's been doing really, really well. Mike Evans with 10 targets and a filthy touchdown catch. Doug Martin has all the running back work. No doubt about it. We just need a good matchup before we can go to him. O.J. Howard, yeah, he went for the 2 touchdowns. Braid is the end zone target, though. Remember, O.J. Howard, though, is playing a lot of snaps, and he's very athletic, and he's clearly creating a rapport with Winston. So there's something there that we are interested in. No doubt about it. You know, unfortunately, Tampa Bay would have... It's their defense. If they had any defense, they would be able to win a lot of games because this offense is not bad. The defense is an issue, though, and there's a lot of players complaining about their snap rate. There's a lot of players, you know, complaining about you know, them getting plays and stuff like that. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Buffalo, they deserve credit. I was down. I'm so mad at myself. I was down on Tyrod. I just thought there's no way. He just doesn't have any weapons. And I played the homer thing. Like, our defense can't be this bad. You know, as a Bucks fan growing up, I was like, the defense just can't be that bad. You know, Quan Alexander, these guys are good. Lavonte Davis back. These guys are good. We're going to be better. They're going to bounce back. The linebacking core is healthy again. Nope. Tyrod, super effective, super efficient, 20 for 30, 67% completion rate, 50 rush yards. Again, I mean, if the guy isn't going to throw the ball for a completion, he's going to run the ball and he's going to get a first down. Kid is just good. He's just an effective quarterback. I mean, he's so likable, man. It's just so easy to root for him. LeSean McCoy deserves a lot of credit too. 30 total opportunities, 2 touchdowns. He looked like LeSean McCoy on that one touchdown run, just kind of squirting into space, finding 6 yards when it really looked like there was only 2 or 3 there. He's just so good in traffic. It's really fun to watch. But the point is that Tampa Bay is going to be back and forth and back and forth and back and forth with teams. So we're going to target these games. There's going to be fantasy value in Tampa Bay games because they're going to score. And then they're going to let up scores. And there's going to be a lot of high-scoring totals that we're going to see from the Bucs here. If you let up 30 points to the Buffalo Bills, who scored, like, what, 9 against the freaking Panthers? There was a double digits, or it was one. There was, you know, single digit scoring from both teams. New England, Atlanta, I mean, we know all the storylines here. Sarkisian is a problem. It's a problem that this offense could be the best offense in the NFL. And then they go to like one of the worst. This is an issue. Sarkisian is an issue. I don't really understand why you hired a guy who got fired for being blatantly drunk on the job at USC. But hey, what do I know? I'm not Arthur Blank. I don't, you know, wear silk pajamas for 24 hours a day and have like a evildoer's mustache. God, can you imagine what Arthur Blank's closet looks like? It's just all red and black silk ties and shiny shoes and mustache wax. Pomade products. He is the funniest looking human being. Every time I see him, I'm just like, you are dastardly, aren't you, sir? So dastardly. Sarkisian is an issue, but hey, Julio got force-fed targets, 9 receptions, end zone target. He is just so physically gifted. It's insane. But when Mohamed Sanu continues, you know, he continues to be valuable, but they just, for whatever reason, can't find their way into the end zone. New England playing this game where they say, listen, we're not going to stop necessarily teams from gaining yards, but we're going to stop you from using your best player. And we're going to stop you trot from scoring touchdowns. That's it. So that's kind of how be the New England offense. You know, bend, don't break. That's all they got. Atlanta is in trouble. But I don't think that we can stop going to this offense. I think there's going to be some bounce back games for them, no doubt about it. New England, the backfields are impossible to decipher. Brandon Cook scored a rushing touchdown, more or less. I wish I had answers, guys. I don't know, but there's like 8 skill position players in play. Burkhead, Lewis, Gillisley, White, Cook, Amendola, Hogan, and Gronk. All of them. They're all interesting. They're all possibly interesting. It's just who scores the touchdown, and is there anyone who can get more than 100 yards? We don't have to get 100 yards when all of us get 40, and then we make 320 yards of offense. Fuck. It's true. Do the math. 8 skill position players each go for 40 yards somehow. 320 yards of offense. That's great. Okay. Belichick likes it. Belichick is a communist. He likes to share the wealth. Subplot. He's not actually a Republican. He's a communist. So this is going to be the fucking fantasy football info war. I'm sorry. I can't even joke about that shit. Belichick spreading. He's spreading the wealth too much. Socialist Bill Belichick. Anyway, all right. That's enough for me. I'm going off the rails. Hey, Game by Game Breakdown is going to be out for your evening commute. If you listen to me twice in one day, then I'm sorry. But I'm not sorry because I love doing it. Expect that the energy level is going to be a little bit lower at 4 o'clock when I record the Game by Game Breakdown. All right, guys, we'll see you then. Bye.